Hi everyone, I'm Gary Knoll. Nice to be with you today and share a lot of new information that's easy, inexpensive, and can make a big difference in your health. For example, from the University of Connecticut comes a study about black currant extract, and it triggers the same process without the side effects as statin drugs. Why? Because black currants, which you can get dried or frozen, only a small window of time each year to get them fresh, but they're not difficult to get. But they're rich in polyphenols, and that prevents metabolic dysfunctions induced by diets high in fat and cholesterol. And the results published in the British Journal of Nutrition found that the extract reduces the percentage of mice with diet-induced severe stenosis, or fatty liver, and hypercholesteremia and hyperglycemia, meaning imbalances in their blood sugar level. And the total plasma cholesterol, glucose levels, were significantly lower, that's good, compared to a control group. So here again, we have what is known as a functional food, meaning something that actually functions in a good way in our body, black currants. Inexpensive, easy to find, and they're rich in anthocyanins and polyphenols. Our next story comes from the University of Western Brittany, which is in France, and it's about protecting your liver and protecting your blood sugar level and helping as an anti-diabetic. And that is something that some of us have been using since the early 1970s. It's called spirulina, S-P-I-R-U-L-I-N-A. A study published in the Journal of Nutrition Research found that spirulina is beneficial with people with pre and diabetes. In the study, the University of Western Brittany explored the protective effect on your liver and your blood sugar. And yes, this green algae, this single-celled algae, which is very high in amino acids, and I use it every day, and I know many of you use it every day if you're taking green powders, because it's in there in a big amount. Well, now we're knowing more and more about its healing benefits. So, spirulina, chlorella, chlorophyll from wheatgrass. Yes, all those people in the health food store taking that little 1 or 2 ounce cup of fresh made wheatgrass and drinking it down. They're doing a lot of good for their body, cleansing, rejuvenating, empowering. So get spirulina, at least a teaspoon into your diet each day, preferably in maybe in the morning. It also causes body weight loss and improves your liver's capacity to detox, and it lowers your cholesterol, and it lowers the bad LDL cholesterol, and it's an antioxidant, so it's really good for you. One of the best things you can take. Now, next up, and this comes from Dyson and in the United Kingdom research. Indoor pollution. 2 in 3 adults don't realize how unhealthy the air inside their home could be. Now, many adults are uninformed about indoor air pollution and remain unaware of common pollutants in their homes. They looked at 2,000 British adults, and they revealed a significant number of participants did not know that candles and pet hair and air fresheners could be potential pollutants. Furthermore, others were not aware of the potential health risks possessed by these items. 67% did not associate indoor air pollutants with lung cancer. 81% were dismissive of the idea of heart disease and air pollution. Yet, that's what happens. That's how serious it is. Now, what does this mean? It means something that I said a long time ago. How many of you have the collection of 7 Steps to Perfect Health? I did 7 different videos. Each one showed you about diet, detoxification, rebalancing, rejuvenation. And one did a whole understanding of how we can detoxify our home and office. The first thing you can do is get rid of carpets. Yeah, they really hold all kinds of dander, some molds and mildews. And that includes your old shag carpets. And people just think it's okay. It's not. And especially people that wear their shoes indoors in your home, I don't recommend that. Remember, everything on the bottom of your shoe, everything from outside walking, is now in your house, and it's everywhere that you walk. And then as it dries, it goes up into the air and you breathe it in. So take out the carpets. Hardwood floors, yes. Marble, ceramic, yes. Those are good. Then start to clean your curtains, steam clean them, and then clean your window blinds. What, you got to clean window blinds? Yeah, you do. And around them and above them, any place where dust collects, and dust will collect. And then on top of that, and then air goes into the air and you breathe it in. Disinfect your central air and heat, because when it's not on, again, bacteria accumulate. Same way in your car. Take a natural citrus spray, which is a natural way to purify the air, and just spray it into all of your vents where air comes out or heat comes out. That helps kill them. And then do the same thing in your house. Also, clean up under all your cabinets, especially those like under your sink where water can come through and cause black mold. Simple things, not difficult. And then put house plants in. Spider plants, the Brazilian plants, these allow oxygen to go into the air and trap carbon dioxide and take it out of the air. So it's just healthier air. And of course, you can always buy yourself a multi-filtration air purification system. And that really cleans up the air, especially if you get a good one. And a really good one is going to run you around $700. I feel it's one of the best investments you can put in your home, is a high-end multi-air purifier. Now, I have one against the wall over there. I've had it for 20 years. Has 5 systems. I've never had to have it repaired. I clean it, but it has 5 ways, including one that is ultraviolet. Why do you think in all the laboratories, including my own laboratory, that you have blue lights around all the doors? Because when you walk in, something has blue light, it can kill it, bacteria and viruses. So just be aware how toxic your home can be if you're not paying attention. And even frozen foods still grow bacteria. So let's just say that it's not an animal protein. It's canned beans and something you've frozen, some frozen berries. When it looks at the expiration date, you can give yourself, that's a recommended time to use, but you can go a little longer than that. Then clean it out, start fresh. All right? Keep in mind, almost 43% of the respondents confessed of not being knowledgeable about air pollution and that they needed to do something about it. We all should. All right? And when you fly, I wear this. And why? Because this traps, and there are many different varieties of this, but this traps for about 1 foot all types of pollutants, all types of bacteria, and viruses, in about 12 inches. I wear 2 of them when I'm on a plane, and with a mask that covers my, not a cloth mask, a plastic shield that nothing penetrates. So anything coming up my eyes, my nose, my mouth is blocked, and then this traps anything that may come in from under and around the sides. So go to a movie, go around people, go on public transportation, just wear this. It comes in black also, so if you wear something dark, nobody even knows you have it on. I have this on everywhere I go. The lectures in particular, because I like to meet people afterwards. So just something to help you, all right? It's the little things that matter, like washing your hands and cleaning under your fingernails. What, you got to clean under your fingernails? Well, you don't have to, but it would be a nice place for you to grow sprouts, and you can go in and say, want to join me for lunch? That's gross. You won't be putting. You're not going to get that image out of your mind for a while. Good. Wash your hands. Man, I see so many people, especially in restaurants, that don't use proper hygiene. Now, a separate study from the University of Texas is about sedentary lifestyle associated with coronary artery calcium, that's not good. Cardiologists at the University of Texas Southwestern Medical Center have found that when you're not moving around, when you're sitting, which most people do way too much, that behavior is associated with an increased amount of calcium deposits in the heart arteries. That's really deadly, which in turn is associated with higher risk of heart attacks. And so get up and exercise. When I'm on a plane, doing a long plane ride, like when I flew down to Brazil or Venezuela, or over to France or Italy or Germany, all the other places I fly to, every hour I'm up and I'm walking. I go back to the end of the plane, so I'm not obstructing anyone, and I lean against the wall and I do push-ups against the wall. I do squats up and down every hour. Keep the blood circulating. Then I take extra vitamin E, vitamin C, quercetin, and garlic capsules to thin the blood. So you reduce the likelihood of having any kind of embolism or stroke or a problem with the legs. Remember, and never cross your legs. Never cross your legs, because when you do, you cut off the capacity of the veins to bring blood back to the heart, and it can shut down some of the valves that open and close as blood flows. And it can also affect the arteries. So we just have too much sitting time, and that's not good. All right? So protect yourself. This way you won't be as likely to have a heart attack or a stroke. And finally, walnuts are important for Alzheimer's disease. This is the New York State Institute for Basic Research in Developing Disabilities. Now, we know that walnuts have been around for thousands of years and were used by everyone from Rembrandt right up till modern day people. It's really good. The humble walnut may have yet another power, maintaining brain health. A new study suggests the nuts may delay the onset and slow the progression or even prevent Alzheimer's disease. Dr. Chuan, head of the Developmental Neuroscience Laboratory at the New York State Institute for Basic Research in Developing or Development Disabilities, saw significant improvement in learning skills, memory, reducing anxiety, motor development in this research project. And this was published in the Journal of Alzheimer's Disease. So it might be the alpha-linolenic acid that's in walnuts. It might be the essential fatty acids. That we don't know yet, but a handful of walnuts every day makes a huge difference. Rich in flavonoids, one flavonoid in particular is called fistin, F-I-S-E-T-I-N. And it's also found in strawberries, cucumbers, and it can halt memory loss associated with Alzheimer's. Simple things make a big difference. And the ability to chew properly may improve blood sugar levels in patients with type 2 diabetes, University of Buffalo. So if you're a healthcare provider treating people with type 2 diabetes, suggest that they chew properly and their teeth are healthy. This was published in PLOS One, a major journal. And they found that people with type 2 diabetes who have full chewing function have a blood glucose level that is significantly lower than patients whose ability to chew effectively is impaired. A lot of people have bad gums. With bad gums, you have periodontal conditions. And this was done at the Department of Periodontics and at the School of Dentistry. So with your teeth taking your time, eating and chewing more thoroughly, your food becomes more properly digestible, all right? And that can slow the rise of blood sugar rather than just kind of gulping it down. That's the latest on health and healing. We're going to take a break and come right back. Please stay with us. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us today. I'd like for you to call in and share your points of view. We have a lot of very important things happening, and I want to hear your feedback. Our talkback number is 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. And one of the topics I'd like for you to talk about, see what you think about, is from a Dr. Lindley. Dr. Kay Lindley, she is very important on this topic, and this is about our freedom, our birthright, and how it's being usurped in different ways, and especially about the World Health Organization's new treaty. And in this treaty, there is language that can be applied and interpreted to their advantage. Let's go to the clip.
Now, what are the implications of proposed amendments to the World Health Organization Pandemic Preparedness Treaty, and what, if anything, does it mean for us here in Britain? My first guest this evening is Dr. Kat Linley, joining us all the way from the United States of America. Are you there, Kat? Ah, there you are.
I'm here.
Kat, first of all, tell me about the team of which you are a part and the meetings in the EU Parliament. What you were doing there?
So we were in Brussels on Wednesday at the invitation of MEP from Croatia, Mislav Kolakušić, Ivan Sinčić, Christine Anderson from Germany, Francesca Donato from Italy, and MEP from Romania, Mr. Terry. And they invited us to present on what's happening, and I gave testimony about the WHO pandemic treaty and the IHR amendments.
What concerns specifically were you raising about this much vaunted amendment to the treaty?
So I hope that everyone really listens and hears what you're saying, because freedom is our birthright. Now, if WHO pandemic treaty or the IHR amendments pass next May, that won't be the case for most of us. So far, in these past 3 years, WHO would give recommendations on what happens if there is an outbreak, a pandemic or something. If this is passed, it will not be recommendations anymore. It's going to be mandatory obligations. And WHO Director General, they will have power to actually proclaim whether the country needs to close the borders, what type of medications, tests, future vaccines we can use. They will also require all our member states to give up to 5% of their health budget to the WHO, because they need that money to actually kind of administer this new bureaucracy that they're starting to create. The bottom line from our standpoint, the way the United States is looking at it, is we feel that the nations will lose sovereignty, at least will lose rights on how they can implement any strategies, whether there is a new pandemic or not. Everything will be dictated by WHO.
On a day like today in Britain, the coronation, sovereignty, I would contend, should be uppermost in people's thinking. Will this, do you get the impression, and would it be true to say that these amendments have teeth? It's all very well the WHO making a commandment from on high, but do they have the teeth to make, say, Britain go along with what's being ordered?
I really think that your MPs need to start looking into this, because the IHR, the International Health Regulations, they are part of an international law that our countries have already adopted. So these amendments, if they're passed, we do feel that there is danger that they could be implemented, but because our leader can just sign them, or the actually to be the head of HHS, which is Health and Human Services for us. The other instrument is pandemic treaty. Pandemic treaty needs to be ratified in Senate in the United States by 2/3 of the vote. But there is some contention that actually can also bypass the Senate. So I think it's important that every country looks into how these things are going to be implemented, because I do think that there are back doors. There is probably already legislation in place that it will be implemented.
Kat, bear with me while I bring in my panelists here in the studio today, a lawyer. Andrew, how do you react to what Dr. Linley is saying there?
Well, I've read the report, and I think it's the treaty, and I've read various diatribes on it. And basically, they're saying it's a voluntary treaty, which is in draft form. There are a number of things it says about not interfering with sovereignty. In fact, the very first line of it reaffirms the principle of sovereignty of state parties in addressing public health matters. I mean, that's what it says there. And dealing with the other points, and there is nowhere in there which talks about lockdowns, closures, contact tracing or online speech and so on and so forth. As I say, so looking at a 32-page document, I think we need to say, well, what does it actually say rather than what we think it might say?
Kat, Kat, you're listening to that. That sounds as though, it sounds as though we don't have anything to worry about because sovereignty will always be key. And this is the cleft stick I find myself in as a reasonable person paying attention. Are we about to lose sovereignty or not?
So I appreciate his response, but I would say that we actually need to be very careful. There is a difference between pandemic treaty and the international health regulation amendments. In the amendments themselves, there are several provisions that need to be very concerning. They actually remove the whole line about human rights and start talking about equity. They talk about creating a censorship campaign on misinformation, disinformation, as I call it, WHO version of Ministry of Truth. They talk about using different regulations and things to approve the new products. And they definitely talk about that they can decide what type of measures are implemented if we have another pandemic. Also, the Director General can go into a region if there is a perceived health emergency, look at it, declare a pandemic, and then definitely close border closures and lockdowns. So I respectfully disagree. I appreciate his comments, but even let's say that I'm a little bit too cautious and a little bit too worried. I think we learned these past 3 years that it's better to be on guard and look into this. As I like to say, better be safe than sorry.
Absolutely. Dr. Kat Linley, thank you so much for your time this evening. I have simply run out of time. Such an important topic. Thank you for your contribution this evening.
This next clip is startling, but it's not uncommon, but it's growing. Where for no good reason, a store, it could be a small store or a large store, in this case it's a Walmart store, is suddenly taken over by hundreds of individuals living within a community, and they rampage, they steal everything, and they leave. There are no arrests, and the store can do nothing, except as it did in this case, it closes. In fact, Walmart is closing stores in Chicago, in San Francisco, but other stores like Nordstrom, which is one of the most high-end stores in San Francisco, both of their stores are closed now. Why? Same reason, massive theft. This does not represent the people living in that community. It represents those individuals within that community who feel, well, they can get something for nothing. They don't think about what happens when all of the pharmacies in the community go out of business. And the small businesses that have been broken into or theft occur on a daily basis close up. Well, where are you going to get these drugs if you need them, medications? Where are you going to get baby formula? And this video shows one woman who says, I will not steal anything here because I don't steal. Well, the vast majority of people don't steal. The vast majority of people in that neighborhood don't steal. But they're all going to be adversely affected by what happens with those in their neighborhood who do. This is happening at a level we've never seen in American history, and it's going to get a lot worse. Why? Gangs. How many gangs are there in the United States? There are 30,000 gangs. That's just gangs. Some of these gangs have tens of thousands of members, like the Mexican Mafia and the Sinaloa cartels working in both Mexico and the United States, the Honduras gangs. They're the ones who control the fentanyl and drugs to all these homeless encampments in San Francisco and Washington and the state and Oregon, Los Angeles. And they're thriving. They're making tremendous amounts of money. And they're the ones who frequently organize. All the cars and vans show up and block an intersection, and then they run out with sledgehammers, break into the jewelry stores, steal everything. It's a phenomena. And then suddenly they're gone in 4 minutes. These are well thought through and highly professional, coordinated efforts. And they're not going in to steal bananas. They're stealing, you know, Louis Vuitton bags and high-end jewelry. So what are the people to do? There's only so much you can do to protect yourself as a small business person. The government's not doing nothing, zero. To the contrary, they're making this theft a misdemeanor. So there's no consequence. So the gangs are pouring in the United States. Why wouldn't they? They can get far richer without any thought of going to prison. Let's watch the video.
Walmart told us in a statement that their annual losses nearly doubled in Chicago in the last 5 years, that losing millions of dollars a year is forcing them to close these stores.
I might get in trouble for saying this, but I feel like it needs to be said. Walmart is closing 4 stores in areas where they are saying they're not profitable, right? And people are outraged. I mean, outraged. So the big Walmart over on 83rd and Stewart is closing. And today they've been having a bunch of protests, angry people out. People are just angry and sad, protesting Walmart. We got politicians out there making speeches saying, how could Walmart do this to the community? And now they're calling Walmart racist for taking a resource out of the Black community, and how dare them. They need to explain how it is that Walmart is not profitable when the store is always full, it's always packed, people are always shopping. Do y'all want Walmart to just like come out and say it? Y'all ninjas steal.
What I'm saying is that Black people need to stop lying.
Say something.
Black people need to stop lying. We really need to stop lying. Like, I sincerely hate the blind, misplaced anger. It's like that Walmart on 83rd was destroyed. Like, complete. I'm sorry, it's hot as hell in my house. So, excuse me, I'm a little moist. That Walmart was completely destroyed during the riots, during COVID. I mean, completely destroyed. They even set something on fire in that store, set off the sprinklers and flooded the entire store. And Walmart said, the hell with y'all. We're not reopening this store, period, because it's not worth it. So what happened? The community came together, protested, petitioned for Walmart to reopen that store. I don't even think it's been a full two. I don't think it's been a full 2 years since that Walmart has reopened. So Walmart said, okay, we'll give it another shot. We'll reopen the store because we know that the community needs it. I was talking to one of the managers in there, and he was just telling me how bad the theft is at that store. Not only the theft is terrible, they have a lot of violent incidents. I think maybe it was just 2 weeks ago someone got killed up there. I hate going to that store. I go to that store out of necessity. I honestly go to that store out of necessity when I'm tired and I just don't feel like driving anywhere else. And every time I go in that store, I put my head down. I don't look nobody in the eye. I just want to get in and out. And it's always some kind of incident going on up in there. Walmart is like, we tired of this. We gone. Goodbye. No prior warning. Now, the day after Walmart announced that they were closing 4 stores, the very next day, somebody went in there and stole 6 TVs out of the store. And y'all want to stand out there and protest and say, oh, how could they do this? They are hurting our community. Well, Walmart was a resource for this community. The community did not protect that resource, so the resource is going away. And people are upset and calling Walmart racist because of this move. Please make it make sense. Like, it really bothers me when people just blindly are mad and not looking at the logical side of the situation. It doesn't make sense for any kind of company to come into a neighborhood and just continuously let people just steal, shootings, fights. It's so hard for them to even keep employees, managers at that location. So why would they continue to fight to keep this location open? All I'm saying is, yes, it's a very sad thing that the community is losing this store, losing this resource. It's sad for the law-abiding citizens that need that store, that rely on that store as their neighborhood Walmart. But, you know, the sad truth is, it doesn't make sense for them to keep the store open if all these terrible things keep happening at this location. When Walmart reopened after the riots, it should have been 20 grandmothers up there, grandmothers and grandfathers with house shoes and belts and bats standing at every aisle.
I done told you, come here, you.
But nobody is doing anything. No one is taking responsibility. Like, we understand. We understand why y'all leaving. Our bad. That's all I'm saying. Like, I've been watching the news stories all day, and people standing outside of that Walmart protesting, calling them racist. It's just like, come on, place the blame where blame is due. Let's just be real, y'all. And that's all I'm gonna say about it. Okay?
Down in the Sinaloa cartel is one of the seven biggest cartels in the world. It has tens of thousands of members. In the United States and in Mexico, you have the Honduran gangs. Who do you think brings the fentanyl? Who do you think sells them the drugs at all these encampments where people are drug addicts? The Honduran cartels. There's also a big cartel supplying drugs out of not just Honduras, but also out of El Salvador. And also, the gangs are charging a lot of these people who are on the street rent. Yeah, they're getting money from them from rent, and if you can't pay the rent, then take the shopping cart, go into this store, and we got someone going with you, show you what to put in the cart. They'll be adding it up to $950 and come right back out. We'll give you another cart. You go back in. And they can't touch you. They can't stop you. What do you think you're doing if you're emptying out small businesses, large businesses, small, you know, boutiques, have no clothes at the end of the day? Do you think that it's going to continue? They're going to continue to buy clothes knowing that no one's protecting, the police not protecting, the mayor's not protecting, the district attorney's not protecting. Nobody's protecting a small business person anywhere in these cities. And then the gangs are also, they're coming across the border, unstoppable. We're talking about terrorists coming across who've been caught, but think of the ones they didn't get caught. So when will the next 9/11 occur? And then who will they blame? You see, I could have opened up another health food store. My first store in 1967 is still there, a little tiny hole in the wall up on 108th and Broadway, and Uptown Whole Foods on 89th and Broadway. But I chose not to. Why? I was given space. I was asked, Gary, you're a friend, take over this health food restaurant. We can't do it anymore. I said, no. Why not? Because I see what's happening now every day. People coming into a store and stealing. Now, historically, starting about 5 years ago, I would see people, older people, coming in and stealing. We never arrest them. And some of them were even retired faculty from a major university. They didn't have enough to live on. And one woman in particular, I'll never forget this, because she had shopped there for decades. And then one day, the night manager came over and says, there's a woman back in the store and she's stealing. So I went to the back of the store and I said, can I help you? And she looked, she said, oh, I'm sorry. I'm so humiliated and embarrassed. I said, about what? And then she took out this package of, it was a salmon cooked. And I said, why could you not pay for it? And then she explained her financial circumstances. And they were, you know, not going to happen to everyone, and certainly not a retired professor. But hers was different, and she had taken care of a relative who was sick, and it wasn't covered by the different insurances, and she ended up with no money. And she said, I have no way of explaining how it feels to be this desperate. And I said, well, look, at 9 o'clock every night, I give away food. In a given day, I feed it could be 150, but probably minimally 75 people. You never have to steal. Just ask. I said, I don't have this store open for profit. To the contrary, I've been giving away free food to 75 to 100 people for the last 40 years, every day, 7 days a week. Just ask. Come in after 9 o'clock. Go ahead and take the salmon. So don't feel embarrassed. Don't feel bad. And the people coming in are not people you would think. And then COVID comes, and the business is cut in half, and the people with families move out of the neighborhood. And now every single day you're losing $1,000 to $2,000 a day. And then on top of that comes a new type of theft. Not the people in the neighborhood who were very appreciative of the fact they could come in before 8 a.m. and get a, in fact, with the people in the park, I would find out. I don't want to go into all the things I do, and I've never said any of this, but I, going into the park one day about 5 years ago into Riverside Park to do a workout, as I'm passing a bench, a guy says, "Good morning, Gary." I looked over and there's this fella looking like he's in his 60s, maybe 70s, reading New York Times. And but he had a juice. And I said, "Well, you're into your juice." "Oh, yeah." He says, I listen to you all the time, and my family don't follow your advice, but I do, and I feel great, no diseases. So we got into a conversation. Turns out, I won't mention his name or his position, but he is one of the top people at Lincoln Center. That's all I'll say. In any case, I said, "Have you noticed a phenomena?" "What's that?" I said, "Not on the first plateau of Riverside Drive where they have the beautiful park and all the community gardens, but go down by the river, and there's that bike path that goes clear down to Wall Street and clear around from the George Washington Bridge." I said, "From about a mile in length, every morning there's about 100 people who line up in front of a single one of those water fountains, and even in the middle of winter, and they'll get water in a bowl, and they'll brush their teeth, and they'll shave, and you'll see they'll take down to their shirt, so they have a bare chest, and they'll wash under their arms and their chest and their face and comb their hair, and then they put on their backpack, and they go up, and then they leave the park." And I said, "I spoke with the police, and the police tell them, pack up your place where you sleep, these little tiny hovels." One guy had an old box that a refrigerator came in, and so he lines it, and then he goes in there at night and he sleeps. But they have to hide him up against that old stone wall that nobody can see, and then they have to disappear. And he said, "Why they have to disappear?" I said, "Because the people, the very liberal spiritual people on the Upper West Side, don't want to go in the park and see a homeless person. It embarrasses them. How dare you? Do you realize how much I spend on my apartment and my view of the do you realize how much money I have to spend to get my kid into a private school and bribe everyone?" And I said, "This is the Upper West Side. It pretends to be one thing, and it's actually very, very different." And he agreed. He said, "You got it right." And so that's when I would always go into the park, and I'd take little cards and I'd give it to these guys, and when they were on their way up, and I'd say, you want breakfast?" And they'd, "Yeah." "Go up here and you can get a free breakfast. Get there before 8 o'clock. Now, I wished everyone who could do something for others did something, but almost always we don't. And those who have extra gifts, who could give those easily in life. I was thinking about, think of three billionaires right off the top of your head: Michael Jordan, Beyonce and Jay-Z, and Oprah Winfrey. They could easily go in and rehabilitate a whole neighborhood in Harlem or any place else, but had they? We know about how much they spend on their travel on yachts and private jets, but how about the things that really matter? Helping a person who has less have just a little more, even if it's food, even if it's taking a person. And I remember seeing this little guy wanting to shine shoes at 86 and Broadway. It was snowing out, and nobody was stopping to get their shoes shined, and he was shivering. And I went over and I said, "Anyone shine your shoes?" He said, "No." I said, "You look a little cold." He said, "I am." But I got it. And I guess he was 10, 11 years old. I said, "Come on with me." And I said, "We're going to walk 2 blocks to Morris Brothers." I went in there and I said, "Pick out a down coat and gloves and boots, and so at least you're not going to be cold." All right. Little thing, wasn't a big deal. Well, I believe you should do that every single day of your life. That's just me. That's how you honor your spiritual self. Everybody talks like they can do something, and okay, do it. Judge yourself by what you do, not what you think. Everybody's going to be better, but then most of them don't end up being better. Now, that gets me to this point. In 2 days from now, New York City will change forever, and not in a good way. And it's going to be because there's going to be an opening and a flood that we've never seen before of people coming across our borders in the United States. Now, I believe we are better because of allowing people in legally who bring their culture, bring their strengths, and then blend into the uniqueness of our melting pot of a country. However, the people who are advocating for everyone who wants to come to America to come with no standards whatsoever, this is purely political. It has nothing to do about caring about these people, because if they cared about the people, they would have arrangements in the countries where these people are choosing to leave that prepare a person for entry into a different country, a different culture with different standards. You would help by setting up a whole center in each country where people are coming from, where they can be checked for medical diseases, because a lot of these people are coming with tuberculosis, and that's going to spread everywhere. And then we're going to have another outbreak of different conditions where you take care of their health, you help teach them English, you help them prepare for a job and have a connection in the United States. For this person has these skills, where can they work? So when they come to the United States, they're come as a welcomed asset to the country because they're prepared. They're not just going to come in here and be left on the street or stuck in some rat hole. No. They're going to have a place to go, a support system when they get there, clinics they can go to that will help them, social systems that will help them. That's humane. That's legitimate. And that's never been done. But then again, Occam's razor, what would solve a problem is rarely what we ever use. Instead, they're flooding across, including people bringing girls. 85% of these teenagers, 12 to 14 years old, are being brought when they're checked. The DNA doesn't match. These are drug cartels. Remember I said there are 30,000 drug gangs? There are a couple million members, and they're going to places where they can put these young girls. But let me tell you the backstory of this. The backstory is that they select these girls. They have people that get a commission. They're called 10 percenters. Find us the prettiest girls in the school, all right? And you get a commission. So they find 10 girls. They then take these girls home and meet with the parents and the in-laws. And they say, here, what we're going to do, we're going to take your girl for 3 years into the United States. She'll be well taken care of. She won't. And she can return in 3 years. She'll be dead in all likelihood. But if she should call the police, if she should report to people in the house where she's at, then you will all be beheaded, and we'll send her photographs of your head severed from your body, all of you. And these people in El Salvador and Mexico, they don't bluff. They do it all the time. And or if any of you talk with the authorities, we'll show you the head of your daughter. Or we might put her in a 55-gallon drum barrel and watch her scream to death as we're pouring in acid so she dissolves. Well, that scares the hell out of someone, anyone, knowing that these people do this without any conscience. So when you open your borders, tens of thousands of these girls are being brought into the United States for pedophiles. And we don't seem to care about that and terrorists. Now, we want good people, and most of the people probably are very good. But shouldn't it be a way of bringing people in, as historically we have, who are prepared when they get here, not to have to live on the street, that's inhumane, not to be head up with hustlers, because they're paying everyone all the way up, and then we don't want anything to do with them, and that's inhumane. But here's what's going to happen. In 2 days, you're going to see the gates open, and they're going to come. In Central Park, as of this morning, and you can read it for yourself, they're going to put up a tent city in Central Park. Okay. And also at empty airline hangars at Kennedy Airport. Good. And they're also going to do other parks in the New York area. All right. And they're going to go over to Coney Island. Okay. But when you put in all these tents for tens of thousands of people into Central Park, where's their toilet? Where's their showers? Where's their place to eat? Well, I guess we'll make that up as we go along. Okay. And you're going to have how many people, you can't control it. And people are going to go where they hear there's a chance to have something. Of course, they won't go to Martha's Vineyard because all the liberals in Martha's Vineyard says, we want you to come across our borders because you'll vote for Democrats. And that's the only reason any of these damn people in Congress are promoting this and the media as well. But don't come to Martha's Vineyard. We have a very special person living here. And they're not going to be happy if you camp outside their house and defecate on their front lawn. Okay, out they go in 12 hours. But Central Park, maybe it's just karma. Maybe it's just karma saying for all the people who didn't want anyone in your neighborhood because it would embarrass you, or in Riverside Park because we don't want to go down there in our $3,000 Nike shoes jogging and with our yoga teacher and our psychologist and our woke counselor who tells us which words we can use that day, and suddenly see someone who, oh, you don't look like you belong here. Nothing like a class system to awaken people to reality. But maybe with all of Central Park no longer being able to even walk in it, go in it, bikers, runners, what do you think is going to happen when that park explodes with all this? Well, that's coming. So that means all of our parks are going to be taken over and all the hotels taken over. Have any of you gone into a hotel that's already been filled and see how it's been destroyed? I see. That's not the part you want to see of this story. Okay, then don't see. It's like side effects of COVID. We don't want to see the side effects. They do not exist. There's never been a person die of COVID vaccines. Never been a person injured by COVID vaccines. Trust us, we're the New York Times. We're the Wall Street Journal. We're the manufacturers. We're Anthony Fauci. Would we ever lie about anything at any time? Never in our history. That's why we live on the Upper West Side. Well, maybe karma's going to come to you, because if you're going to open Central Park, they're certainly going to open Riverside Drive. So now New York City will, in the fastest measure humanly possible, you're going to see it happening right now in all over Texas, in the border, the 900-mile border. You see in El Paso, nothing but tents, the entire streets. And the mayors are saying, nobody can do business. People are robbing and stealing. We don't know what to do with these people. Send them off to sanctuary cities. That's what they're doing. So all your sanctuary cities, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Chicago, Washington, D.C., Philadelphia, St. Louis, Detroit, and Atlanta. Well, here we go. You opened a door, and you have no way of closing it, and you have no way of helping these people in any legitimate way. So you, who've advocated this without being it properly done, you are responsible for these people's abuse and neglect. And that's what's going to be happening. And this is going to get really down and really dark. Yesterday at my show, I was mentioning my buddy, Robert Houston, how we were the first to ever write a national article about the politics of cancer. And I mentioned his sister, and who is a leading spiritual feminist. And I mentioned a different Houston. And Jean Houston is his sister. I mentioned Mary Houston, who I used to know. I haven't seen her in years and years and years. She was on WBI for a long time. And also, I said that your best option, if you want to maintain your freedoms and civility, is look towards those regional places, ideally country places in red states, because there, you're going to have a better chance of not being over-mandated, over-controlled, and I believe they're going to be fighting back against the mandates and the controls and the digital currencies and other things that are going to be happening everywhere. Just want to share that with you. Now let's see who's got some ideas. I'd like to hear your feedback. 888-874-4888. Give us a call. Do we have any calls on the line? If we do, we'll go to them. If not, I'm going to go to a clip.
We got Jeremiah from Harlem.
Good. Well, we have one voice that I knew would speak out, the Oracle of Harlem, Jeremiah. Hi, Jeremiah.
Pleasure to talk with you, Gary. You touched on so many things, and I have opinions about all the things that you've stated since I first called in. But I felt compelled to call in because you were touching on something that I was just talking about with a good friend just earlier today. And it's sort of just this issue of, you know, how we behave as a community. You know, there's this whole sort of overarching picture that we can create, talking about various agencies and institutions of our society. And we have some serious problems in regard to that, no doubt about it, from, you know, big military, big pharma, prison industrial complex, et cetera, it goes on and on and on. But what about, which is something that was underscored in your comments earlier, what about the fact that we just don't know how to behave well as communities? There are people within our communities who have no respect for their neighbors whatsoever. And that's not the fault of a Swiss banker, per se, or, you know, maybe it is on an abstract level, but if we can't just behave better and respect each other more within the community, I mean, frankly, who's going to come swooping in to make our lives better? What institution or agency can correct the fact that we don't respect ourselves and don't respect each other?
Right now, I'd like for you to give us, I have my own interpretation. I believe it must start from our cultural leaders in a community, our religious leaders, our social leaders, and our school teachers, because the school teachers used to be in a wonderful position. They could work with a child who may have been difficult for the parents to work with, even two parents. You can be an ideal parent. It doesn't mean you have an ideal child. You can be a single parent and still overcome the fact that the child may not have a father, but what about being a big brother? We should have big brothers and big sisters in every community in the United States, because there's a lot of teenagers who are not close enough to their parents and are close to the school teachers. We used to be close to our school teachers. Our teachers loved us, cared for us. When we did something wrong, said something wrong, they would tell us, and they'd say, do you want your family embarrassed by what you're doing? That there were people who were there to remind us, to bear witness to our actions, our words, our deeds, our manners, our morals, because it made a difference. Today, we have made it, on one hand, we've made it too easy for people to be influenced by sources outside the family. We have made it too challenging for a lot of school teachers to be able to remediate on issues where the school has to have a teacher, a certain curriculum, and how they teach it. That can't compete with how exciting and interesting and diverse the world outside is, the world on their cell phones. And so we have things not easily under control, outside influencers. We have people by the thousands in the United States who make huge amounts of money by influencing people. Buy these sneakers, buy these shoes, buy this pizza. Here's where I'm going. Look at what I'm... And that's not the way we should learn, by people who are profiting by influencing us. And we should have more sociologists within communities. We should have a council, a community council, that is selected by the community based upon their moral values, their cultural values, and their values to protect the community, all the people in the community, who meet on a regular basis, who, if someone has a problem, they can go in and talk with this person before someone calls the police, where you can help interfere in a process. That's what's missing today, in part. But also, remember, it doesn't take a majority to destroy something that has taken decades to build. It takes a minority of individuals, maybe 3%, less than 3% of the community over in Chicago destroyed Walmart, and also less than 3% are destroying San Francisco and Portland. The actual number of people is relatively small, but the impact of that on everyone else is horrific. So we need to regroup and start appreciating not the people elected to office, because how often they tell us one thing and do just the opposite. We need people who are appointed, maybe for a time period, to work within communities. If you've got a problem with teaching your kid, then get retired school teachers. That's one of our greatest assets. These are a treasure, these teachers. They're wise, they've seen it all, they're street smart, and they can talk with people, and then have Zoom conferences where you can homeschool, you can teach, and then have sociologists, have psychologists who are retired, who can answer questions where there's a problem in the family and the parent or parents cannot resolve it. Have a place where a person is going through a problem getting into a gang, getting out. And it, mind you, these gangs are smart today. I'll give you one example, true example, because I was part of helping this person get out of the gang. A person is in school. They have a single parent. The parent is working two jobs and still having trouble making ends meet because the landlords won't give them a break. And they're approached one day, and they're approached and says, look, we care about you, and we know you're struggling. We want to see you do well in school. So we've got some people that can help educate you on some of the classes you may have trouble with. And what's the deal? No deal. No deal. We just want to help you. We help each other. Okay. That sounds good. And then they get to befriend the person. And then one day, you know, they stop off. We're going out and play some basketball. Want to come with us? Oh, you don't have a lot of food. Well, my mom can't afford a lot of food. And I can't get a job right now. I'm only in the 10th grade. Okay. And next thing you know, there's all this food that arrives at the home. Healthy food, good food. Wow. And then about 3 months later, you get your mom's given a receipt that the next 3 months of rent has been paid. And you say, what's going on here? We stick together. We have each other's back. We're good people helping each other. And not a single thing that was illegal or immoral was suggested up to that moment. And then it goes one step further. And then when the person's fully convinced these are their friends, they're good people, then it's, do me a favor, run this across to this avenue and drop this off at this house. What is it? Just an envelope. No big deal. Okay, the person goes over, maybe curious, but okay. There's no reason to question them. And slowly, this indoctrination process is going on until one day, they're running drugs. And all their bills are paid, and they're protected, and they're doing well in school. That's a whole new type of gang member. It's not about the, you know, the Bloods and the Crips anymore. There's a whole new difference to it. And it's just like, where do you think all of these smash and grabs come from, where suddenly 12 cars and vans pull all in together and create a gridlock in the middle of the most expensive street in San Francisco, and within seconds, people all hooded jump out, break open the windows, the jewelry store, take all the jewelry, go into other stores and take everything, get back in the car, and they're gone within 3 minutes before the police can arrive. They're gone. Those are gangs, well organized. You see, so the gangs now, 30,000 of them, they're going to the places that are most liberal. They're going to the places where a felony has been reduced to a misdemeanor, and then there's no bail. They know that they can protect their members this way. Very few, unless they kill someone or rape someone, they're not going to get a felony. Abusing someone, smashing someone in the face, you know, robbing them, that's nothing in these cities. So that's where the crimes are increasing, and that's where the poverty is occurring. That's where it's most dangerous. And who's it most dangerous for? The community members, the peaceful, loving people. You heard what that woman said. I won't steal this because it's immoral. You know, and the vast majority of people in the community will not steal something. They're moral, they're ethical, they're thoughtful, but they don't control the community. Now I want them to, as you do, to want them to have the control so that it returns to what it once was, a civil place where people respected the right to be alive. And that means you have to bring in people who are wise and willing to help members of the community. Shop for people who are too frail or too afraid to go to a bank or to a store, and show people you care. Have one, I took a block, a buddy of mine, an African-American gentleman, this goes back 50 years, he bought a brownstone for $100,000 then, imagine that, on 88th Street between Amsterdam and Columbus Avenue. And there was massive crime. And a lot of nurses and people work late shifts would come home as they open the door. Boom, someone comes behind him, mugs him or rapes him. So I got with Bill and we got together, all the neighbors. We had a meeting and I said, all of it, who likes to stay up late? Oh, these people do. Okay, here's a walkie-talkie or a telephone, and have both. Because the moment you see something going on in the street, make a call and then other people will come outside. And if people start coming outside, especially those who are physically capable of, that is a deterrent. If you see someone breaking into a car or apartment, call the police. You got the 20 precinct. Within 2 months of applying that, on that one block, there was zero crime on the block. It was a safe block. Now, if we have to take back our cities block by block, let's do it. The city is worth it. The people are worth it. Your peace of mind is worth it. And especially focus upon the areas where you have most of your senior citizens who literally are lonely. They're living isolated lives, and they've lived such a precious life. They should be engaging in civil joy, and we can do that. Does that make sense to you, Jeremiah?
Gary, the call got dropped.
Oh, got dropped. Okay. Well, we're out of time, and I'm sure we had other people with good ideas, and feel free tomorrow to call in and share your good ideas, okay? Because the politicians, they don't have any good ideas. All they're doing right now is they're exploiting, unfortunately and unfairly, vulnerable people from around the world with complete access to a life of ease and joy and free everything. And unfortunately, when they get here, they don't have the jobs, they don't have a standard of living, possibly even less than where they came from, possibly more. And crime, and they're also victims of crime. The people living in one nice hotel in Midtown, the women have been raped and abused. Hypodermic needles all over the place, inside, trash everywhere inside. So that is no way to treat people. It's a form of abuse of the migrants, because they are only good to a society who can politically control the outcome by having them vote and keeping them in power forever. It is such a rotten position that we put people in. Just a different perspective. You can agree or disagree with it. We're out of time. Tonight, Randy Credico just returned after 3 weeks in Donbass and Mariupol and Russia. He's got a lot to say. He'll be saying it tonight at 7 o'clock on the Progressive Commentary Hour. Have a nice day, everyone.